Hello, I'm Jamie Adams, actor and board game enthusiast.
I'm Sam Maggs, maker of music and player of games.
And I'm Ian McAllister, reviewer and writer for The Giant Brain. And this is Brainwaves, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news.
And our headlines for April the 15th. Gloomhaven, Forgotten Circles. The world's number one board game gets its first expansion. Piper Alpha Monopoly. Is this a step too far for Hasbro? And Battlestar Galactica miniatures game announced. Can Ares Games compete with giants such as Star Wars X-Wing and Star Trek Attack Wing? All of this and more on today's Brainwaves.
Yes, it is true. The first expansion for the massive behemoth game that is Gloomhaven has been announced. Forgotten Circles is coming out this year. It has a new class, the Aether Diviner, new monsters and items in there, and has 20 new scenarios taking place after the events of the first game, which is a lot of play to get to that expansion, it has to be said. But Cephalofair have said that there will be another big expansion coming next year, we do believe, something along the size of Gloomhaven itself, and that will be something to behold.
Ares Games has announced Battlestar Galactica Starship Battles. From the creators of Wings of Glory and Sails of Glory, that's Andrea Angiolino and Andrea Mainini, Battlestar Galactica Starship Battles will be presented at Gen Con 2018, and it'll feature the Cylons and the Colonial Fleets. And there's also plans later down the line to include capital ship combat as well as dogfight combat.
And 2018 marks 30 years since the Piper Alpha tragedy, in which 167 people lost their lives when Piper Alpha oil rig exploded off the coast of Aberdeen, Scotland. To commemorate this event, games publisher Hasbro, along with a number of other sponsors, including energy company Shell, have released a limited number of Piper Alpha-themed Monopoly boards. Over 2,000 are being produced by Hasbro and are available via a Just Giving campaign in aid of the Piper Alpha Memorial Garden. So far, £22,000 has been raised by the fund. However, there's been a significant backlash from the community of families affected by the tragedy. Hasbro are yet to respond.
Recently, the CIA in America has released copies of rules and game materials online to play two of the tabletop games the CIA itself uses to train operatives. These games are Collection, which is a similar game to Pandemic, and Kingpin, The Hunt for El Chapo. Both games' files and materials are available online, and have a little check out. They're not fair because they're training agents for real life.
Games Workshop have announced The Lord of the Rings, Quest of Mount Doom, a Middle-earth adventure game for 2 to 5 players ages 8 and up. Games Workshop claimed that this is a fast-paced board game, cooperative, that can last 30 to 45 minutes. Now, this does seem to reuse older sculpts, possibly in an attempt to repackage those miniatures in a final attempt to sell as many as they can. While we don't have a confirmed release date yet, Games Workshop have promised to reveal more information in the near future.
I'd certainly expect to see it at Expo Sam, if not at Gen Con at least. Of course, here at Brainwaves, we're not all just about the board games and card games, we're also about the tabletop RPGs, and there has been quite a bit of news this week from various segments of the RPG community. First up is the announcement from Ulysses Publishing in the US that they have taken on the 40K license in the Wrath and Glory RPG. This got announced a little while ago, but more information has started to come out. You'll be able to play all sorts of characters, including some of the Xenos that are usually seen as the enemies of the Imperium. What the game will be like is a little bit sparse in detail right now, though there are some designer diaries up on their website should you want to check that out, and hopefully it will be a departure from the FFG ones, which in the opinion of this particular reporter were terrible. Next up is The King is Dead from Vincent Baker, the creator of the excellent Dogs in the Vineyard RPG, amongst other great games. This has been billed as a party game that is based around a deck of cards where individual games determine the story of a nation in crisis. The king has just died and various families are vying for the crown. And over the course of the game, you will play little individual games like a conversation over food, meeting sword to sword, or stealing time together. And the various outcomes of those games will determine the eventual coronation of a new king. It's a $10 buy-in only on Kickstarter just now, which I really, really like about the RPG Kickstarters, is they're a very cheap buy-in to get a taste of that game. At higher levels, you can get all sorts of decks from the game, and it looks pretty good. I backed it myself, certainly. And last but not least is Starcrossed from Jason Morningstar, a massive proponent of the LARP scene, and various games like Shabalhiri Roach, which were some of the early indie RPGs. It does basically what it says on the tin. It is a game based around being star-crossed lovers, two-player game, and the core mechanic is based around Jenga Tower, which a previous game called Dread also had. I'm really intrigued to see how this one plays out. Not sure if I'll get it played myself, but certainly an interesting-looking project, and that's also up on Kickstarter just now.
Next on Brainwaves, Jamie Attenborough is live from a forest in Cardboard Planet.
Tree falls in the woods, and there's nobody around to hear it. How many points is it worth? This is Photosynthesis. Designed by Hjalmar Hash, this strategy game sees 2 to 4 players growing trees, fighting for space, fighting for light, and fighting for sweet, sweet victory points. All the while, the sun sweeps around the board, sending its life-giving rays and providing the light for growing, for progressing in the great circle of game table life. A turn has 2 phases. The first has you gaining light points from your trees, and the second has you spending that light on planting seeds, growing trees, and cutting your timber titans down for points. The game itself looks stupendous. Sabrina Miramont's art has produced a board and pieces bursting with vibrant colours. Each player's tree species is unique to them, and there's a wonderful verticality with each of the 3 sizes, giving a clear visual indicator and an attractive table presence. But did you hear that? That's the sound of cutthroat strategic tree combat going on. Not that trees have throats. Trees cast shadows, and the bigger the tree, the bigger the shadow. A shadowed tree gains no light that round, so denial play is essential to be top of the plant food chain. An interesting balance quickly forms between blocking your opponent to deny them resources, and also finding the best space at the best time to cut your big trees down for the points. It's further compounded by the point stacks having decreasing values on them, so speeds of the essence to get the most points quickly. But it wasn't luck that led me to this arboreal Thunderdome. In fact, there's pretty much no luck involved at all. The game doesn't change throughout play, and the end can come rather abruptly, throwing people off their best laid plans. I've witnessed trees just give up on the last second of the game, and save the light they've gathered for extra point scoring at the end. As in all games, planning ahead is key. I worry about how deep the tactical roots of Photosynthesis reach, but I enjoy the simple yet ruthless strategy. Photosynthesis has definitely grown on me, and I'll be watching the tree wars for some time to come.
Of course, the tabletop hobby is always full of interesting things to chat about, and this week on Brainstorming... Brainstorming. Our new segment about controversial topics in the tabletop gaming industry, we are going to talk about the current Kickstarter for Fireball Island, and have a discussion about whether nostalgia is becoming too much of a force in the hobby, and is that a good thing? What do you think, guys?
I haven't played Fireball Island at all. It was
it's a US thing mainly. It does seem to be a massive thing in the US, but
maybe it's also a generational thing. Obviously, I'm assuming that Fireball Island is originally an early Xbox game. Would that be right?
I remember similar things over here. Like, I'd like the Ghost Castle board game as a kid. That was a silly sort of like cardboard thing with like a skull that rolled down a tower and stuff like that. And that's cool when you're that age, but there is little gameplay there. It's a cool toy, essentially, but not much more than that.
And maybe we are at a disadvantage for saying this because we didn't experience it. So maybe we're not, I don't want to say buying in, but we are not sharing that nostalgia that people have for it. And it seemed to be, yes, it was a simple, quite a childish game, but there seemed to be a bit more gameplay from reading the manual online. There was a bit more.
I do believe they've sort of like revamped it and like tried to add in some more mechanics and some more game in there as well. But it does feel to me like the major driving factor behind it being such a successful Kickstarter is the nostalgia. And as we were talking about before we started recording, there's quite a bit of that on Kickstarter just now, like Dinosaur Island, for instance, doing massively well, and that's been sort of, and that look to that game.
Again, that's a very different style of nostalgia, whereas this is style for an actual product that people remember playing. This is the style, this is the theme of Jurassic Park with the serial numbers filed off it.
Absolutely, whereas this is very much, remember that game from your childhood, it's back, it's better than ever.
Yeah, buy give us a lot of money.
You know.
I mean, maybe it'll be fantastic. And it looks, I mean, it does look cool, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no denying it looks wonderful. And the tactile sensation of, you know, playing with marbles and chucking them down a board. I mean, who doesn't love just chucking marbles down a board?
Absolutely. And looking at the Kickstarter page, this is something that, if not buy, because I don't fully know what the game is about, I definitely want to play.
Sam, the game is about getting, apparently, your visitors to this Fireball Island. And you're wanting to get snapshots in various places of the island and of getting the treasure of Vulkar, which
of
is the name
of,
well, exactly, which is the name of the demon head at the top.
But is like the nostalgia for like that kind of game, like obviously it's doing incredibly well, is that good for the hobby in general? Is it good? I mean, like a big projects being on Kickstarter does seem to be quite good for the smaller projects. It means people do look at these things, but I do wonder if like some smaller projects are missing out that might be innovative, that might be interesting games, but they're missing out because they don't appeal to that nostalgia. They're trying something new and innovative. The smaller projects that are trying to push the hobby forwards rather than just sort of sit a nostalgia for the past. I mean, I don't think we can ever get away from that fully, but
I think
it's worth recognizing that that is the case.
Absolutely worth recognizing it. I think it's a situation that is prevalent not only in board games, in video games, in TV, in film. And Restoration Games, and also the president of Restoration Games is Rob Davio, who is, you know, the go-to man right now for, I don't want to say the next in board game trends, but the legacy mechanic in which the board game has a set beginning, middle, and end.
I think board game trend is exactly the right word.
I mean, they've certainly got a good team there, don't get me wrong. Oh, yeah. I do wonder about.
It's not saying that everything Rob Davio touches turns to gold. He's the driving force again. He's got this company, Restoration Games. They remade Downforce, and that's proved to be a hit in many circles. Fireball Island has got $1,395,000 funded, and it's still got 21 days to go at this time.
That's something I was going to mention is, so we're currently recording this on Thursday, the 12th of April. The Kickstarter currently has 21 days to go as of today, and they're reaching on 1.5 million. What this does show is people are at least putting money towards a games company, you know. And if we're saying, is this good for the hobby? Well, it depends on what way you're looking at what is good for the hobby. Is nostalgia and constantly creating kind of these nostalgia titles good for the hobby? Maybe not. But one thing it definitely is doing is it's driving people back towards the board games industry, and it's putting money into the industry.
They've also done Stop Thief as well, which was an old game, I believe, it's resurrected. Yes. Yeah. That's not done so well. They've got a couple of their own titles as well in Restoration Games as well, as I understand it. Oh, no, actually, Restoration Games, their entire thing is about restoring old games. So, like, their new game, Indulgence, is restoring a different game. So it's about going back. And we do see new editions of old games all the time as well. And that's a good thing, because games do go out of fashion, or they go out of print companies go under, that kind of thing. It is good to see games that are regarded as classics or that kind of thing, or games that are important, then being brought back is good.
It very much seems that what Games Workshop's doing at the moment is just revamping old games. So we're seeing Necromunda come back.
That's
true. We're seeing Blood Bowl come back. You know, and everything they're doing is that kind of nostalgia hit. But they're coming from a point of view where it's saying people want these games. People are still playing these games after all these years, and people want new additions. You know, how much brand new content are we seeing come out of Games Workshop, especially, you know, that...
I mean, like, one thing that Games Workshop's reliance on their old IPs has done is it has given them the money and the confidence to release new stuff as well. I mean, like, they released Blood Bowl, it was a massive hit, and now we've got Blood Bowl Blitz coming, which looks like an easier, accessible version of Blood Bowl.
Oh, can't
wait. Fantastic. We saw Shadespire come out last year. That's a really interesting little game. They're trying something new. And I am looking forward to seeing new stuff. So, yeah, in that sense, I think nostalgia is good for the companies that own those IPs that can tie into that pound. I mean, you've got people like ourselves growing up who now have money to spend on games, and we want to spend that money on games because we like doing that.
And I suppose this goes across all the big name publishers as well. So we look at Fantasy Flight. Look at Fantasy Flight Games. They've got the ultimate license to print money, which is the Star Wars license. And everything they're doing there focuses on the original trilogy, Galactic Civil War. But I suppose how much money they are making from that, they can put into other areas across the company to really focus on putting out good quality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Content.
Yeah. And the only thing I worry about a little bit is that, like, sometimes the nostalgia factor might, like, overshadow the smaller companies that are trying something new and innovative. But, like, Kickstarter is quite good for that, for, like, companies that really put out something new and innovative that people really want. Yeah, they'll break through. They'll come out the other side of that.
I suppose the downside as well is people getting stung by that nostalgia. So I think a prime example of that is last year with River Horse Games, when we saw the Labyrinth board game come out, that obviously was branded as the ultimate nostalgia hit. It's David Bowie's back, Labyrinth.
Miniatures.
Collectible miniatures they were branded with. And it's a complete dud of a game, you know. And I think they were asking £40 to £50.
Yeah.
£40 to £50 for that board game, if you can call it a board game.
I reviewed a game recently. Well, the review will be going out tomorrow, actually. Well, 2 days ago, depending on when you listen to this podcast. It'll be out on the blog anyway, out on the giant brain shortly. I reviewed a game called Centipede, which is based on Atari Centipede.
Yeah.
And, yes. It's a perfectly fine little asymmetric game, but my one sort of question in the review is, like, who is this for? Do people have enough nostalgia for Centipede to want a board game equivalent of it?
I would argue it does, because as you said, we grew up playing, you know, these early video games, these really early board games. You know, yes, we weren't in America, but, you know, like you were saying, the games that you were playing. And now we are in this renaissance for board games, and places where video games are now becoming board games again. But, you know, they were done in the 80s. There was the Pac-Man board game and a Donkey Kong board game, which I've seen. I haven't played them because not all the pieces were there, all that kind of stuff. But I think it's good. Oh, yeah, I remember that. I'll bring this back. Oh, it wasn't as good as I remember. I'll make it better. I'll make it better. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is not the first time the Centipede board game has been made. It's been made twice.
Twice?
There's an original one in, like, 1986 or something. I can't remember. I looked it up as part of the review. I checked out on BGG.
Is this the Centipede that's part of the series that includes games like Space Invaders and Asteroids, I believe?
Yeah, there's an Asteroid and there's a Missile Commander, I believe.
A Missile Commander, yeah, so not Space Invaders, sorry.
Yeah.
I think you make a really good point, though, of, like, who is this aimed at? You know, if you're trying to get that nostalgia hit, well, where is the audience for that? Obviously, with a brand like Star Wars, they've got one of the largest IPs in the world, and that's going to draw a lot of people into the hobby. And I suppose what is the lucky thing there is Fantasy Flight are putting out, for the most part, very high-quality games that actually, I think, do represent some of the best.
Yeah, I mean, Legion coming out recently has got universally excellent reviews. I mean, obviously, it is a massive money sink, but it has got excellent reviews from reviewers that I respect and trust. So,
works for Games Workshop,
so...
And I think the danger is then just people buying into that nostalgia hit and then getting a bad product out of that.
I mean,
and obviously going off of the hobby.
We should probably like wrap this up and bring it to a close. But I think like generally nostalgia is not a bad thing for the hobby. Like we've said, it does bring in new blood into the hobby. It makes a fair amount of money for the companies that manage to get those IPs.
Yep.
Just to remember not to ignore the little guys, to look for the new stuff as well, to those people that are pushing things forwards and actually innovating in the tabletop space. Don't ignore those guys as well. But yeah, nostalgia is it's a good way to get people into the hobby, let's face it.
And don't get blinded by nostalgia.
Absolutely.
And that's the important thing.
Absolutely not, yeah. Don't assume that a game's going to be great because it's got your favourite license on it.
And wherever possible, I think it's just read reviews, find
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Well, thanks very much, gents. Well, I think that's about all we have time for on this edition of Brainwaves, but before we go, a little note to the excellent sounding Kartoffelkrieg that is now on Kickstarter, a potato-based war game from Corey Wright that started out as a Twitter joke with him posting pictures of potatoes with little GW sprue pieces in them, and has now evolved into a fully-fledged war game for 2 to 4 players, plays in 45 minutes, and yes, you do need to supply your own potatoes. It has not quite funded yet on Kickstarter. It's looking for a goal of $13,396.
Pounds.
And it has 21 days to go. It's trending towards 42,000 according to my kick tracker. 351 backers at the moment. It looks like a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, it's a absolutely insane thing. There's a lot of like stuff to be decided on there, so whether it'll actually come to fruition, who knows.
It sounds silly and ridiculous, and actually it looks like a potato based version of GW's old game from the 80s, Adeptus Titanicus, just with the hit locations and the different weapons.
So with these miniatures, do you have to boil them, mash them and clip them off the sprues?
Yeah.
I can't continue that.
I think that's us for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening. If you like what you've listened to, then the best way to help us out is to share the podcast wherever you can. Drop us a review and rating on iTunes if you so desire. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Giant Brain, Instagram, Giant Brain UK, Facebook, The Giant Brain, and our main website is thegiantbrain.co.uk, where we put up reviews and all sorts during the week. You can also support us on Patreon or Ko-fi if you'd like to. Links for both of those sites are on the webpage. And you can find links to all the news that we've mentioned in this episode in our show notes. Thanks very much for listening.